CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers now claiming we're already seeing the fallout from this hack.
A ransomware attack in Iowa, this time targeting New Cooperative.
Hi, and welcome back to The Cyber Savvy Farmer. I'm your host, Dave Bedard, and you've reached the finale of our special four-part series on cybersecurity on the farm. We've been talking about all kinds of forms of cybercrime, misinformation, and manipulation, and their potential to disrupt your farm specifically, and the agriculture and agribusiness sectors in general, and who's behind this sort of thing and why. So now that we've looked at the threats to digital infrastructure, how do we batten down the hatches against them?
Can't cheap out on this. I think that you really have to look at it in a very humble way, and make sure that you're using external partners appropriate to kind of audit what you're doing, because you need that sort of sober second opinion. I would say, you know, take that position and that mindset. It's not if, it's when. But also, like, have a plan and write it down and know what to do if and when it happens.
That was Marty Fisher, president of Sherpa Marketing, speaking on a panel at the Agriculture Enlightened Conference in Winnipeg a few months back about a cybersecurity attack at that company. Now, his frankness about what happened there gave the folks attending that conference quite a bit of food for thought. And today we've got his co-panelists here with us on this episode. Janos Bochner and Ritesh Kotek from the Community Safety Knowledge Alliance. That's the lead organization on the Cybersecurity Capacity in Canadian Agriculture Project. Let's have a listen. So the discussion at the conference did put the question of cybersecurity in a clearer perspective, you know, namely that, you know, effective business risk management in this case is not just a matter of hardware and software, but even more so, you know, a matter of people, of practices and planning. I mean, from where you gentlemen sit, is that a fair assessment?
I think that's more than a fair assessment. And here's the thing is that it's very hard for us to know the people element of this, because this is something we don't really hear about until a corporate CEO or somebody who's actually worked through a breach comes out and says, this stuff is stressful. This is, and I've seen situations, and you know, we've been at conferences where individuals have literally said that their IT managers or the people that were in charge of cybersecurity within the organization, when they actually got to deal with a breach, they end up taking a leave of absence afterwards, or even throughout in some cases. And the reason for that is we usually think about it this way: technology, process, then people. I'm going to repeat that: technology, process, then people. We think that technology is going to solve everything. Then we'll create processes of this is a reporting structure. And then finally, we think about the people. Well, we got to flip that. And we got to put people first, because cybersecurity is a people issue in some cases. We talk about a lot of these high-tech crimes are really low-tech solutions. And sometimes, you know, it's kind of the change your password, the element of report something if you see it. Well, that involves people to identify stuff, people to raise their hand, people to say that this is suspicious. So I think it's absolutely a fair assessment that this is a people-centric issue. Yes, there's technological components. Yes, there's processes. I'm not going to gate that, but this is a people issue. And if we're going to solve this, the only way to do it is to ingrain cybersecurity into the cultural fabric of our organizations.
Marty did a great thing when he talked about the human dimension of his experience as an organization. Really importantly, he talked about the human costs to his organization, the stress that was placed on his team and himself during that process, including some of his clients. But he also talked about the human benefits of being able to foster a culture of cyber resilience within the organization. As Ritesh is saying, you know, baking it into the DNA of his organization, what they ended up with was a cybersecurity posture that allowed them to act quickly with agility, as well as a culture that enabled them to engage with their clients in ways that, while the conversations were difficult, they were based in a trusting relationship. And they ended up getting to a stronger place than they were in before the event occurred. And perhaps that's something we can pick up on during our chat today.
So with that in mind, you know, where should the people that we're talking to in this case, to farmers, of course, where should farmers start if they hope to prepare for these sorts of disruptions?
So I remember reading about farms in general, and I was actually pretty shocked to learn that there were over 1,000 registered farms in the Ottawa region alone. And a lot of these farms are independent owners, but they're critical in the supply chain. And the reason I bring that up, and I want to bring this back to the farmer, is think about the health and safety on a farm. And I know this has nothing to do with cybersecurity, but I think it's an important distinction. If we kind of compare health and safety and cybersecurity together. So we wouldn't think twice before going on to a farm or any manufacturing site without wearing the proper PPE. We would have steel-toe boots on. We would have hard hats if need be. We would use our seatbelt. Why? Because health and safety has been ingrained into our culture. But we don't see the same thing with cyber. So, you know, kind of with respect to farmers, how do you start to prepare now for these disruptions? How do you actually ingrain it into the fabric of these individuals? So disruptions are going to happen. And I think on previous podcasts, I've mentioned that, you know, before it used to be a tractor with a computer on it. Now it's a computer with tractor components on it. And these things are going to be interconnected. And there's definitely a price to pay for this convenience if we don't enable the right security and think about how our operations could be potentially disrupted. So I always start by the basics. The basics is do an inventory. Know what you have. Know where your system, what systems you're actually using. And then you want to work backwards. Now that you have that, have you enabled all the security features? Liaison with the vendors. Yes, you can call the vendor and they will actually help you. They got people that are dedicated to helping you secure your farm. And then think about business continuity. Let's just assume the lights get turned off. Your operations are disrupted. What are you going to do in that case? The lights have been turned off. What are you going to do? And, you know, I'll share a quick analogy. And if you've heard it before, I apologize. But if the fire alarm goes off, we know exactly what to do. And we've put in a lot of preventative measures. We got smoke detectors and sprinklers. We get out and we call 911. Fire truck comes. There might be insurance. And we have to relocate, but we know what to do when there's a fire alarm, no matter what time of day. But when those cyber alarms go off, when our farming operations are disrupted, who are we going to call? What processes do we have in place? And if the answer is, I don't have a process in place yet, well, I think this is the time where we start by doing those things that I mentioned. Do an inventory, ensure that all the security features are enabled, and start thinking through what happens if that particular system is turned off. And it could be as simple as going to paper and pen, and then waiting for the systems to get back on, and then, you know, taking it from there. But think about these things. You shouldn't be thinking about it when you're actually in the midst of a cyber attack.
Let's build on that for a sec. So we know that there are a lot of things that farmers already do that have a lot to do with risk management and a lot to do with strengthening their own resilience. When we think about natural disasters, when we think about disease outbreaks and the like. So part of this is going to be talking together and understanding, what do we already do that's kind of like what this is about? And so when we talk about a cyber fire drill, when we talk about asking your vendors some questions about how they're handling your data and what they can do to support you, those are things that are pretty similar to what producers already do in a number of other areas. So part of this is understanding that this is an extension of farm business risk management. And there's a lot that producers can do to improve their posture that can make a really big difference. You know, we talked in previous podcasts about things that you can do to protect yourself from phishing and ransomware. But there's a really important difference here as well. Resilience is not a do-it-yourself activity. So other people need to be involved, and it can never just be about the farmers. We can't place all of the weight and all of the responsibility for the resilience of our agricultural system on the backs of producers. So we can make sure that they're supported really well to do the most that they can do in terms of strengthening their posture in ways that are practical and available. We should be directing supports and resources towards them to help that. And we can talk about what that would look like, but it involves more than just the farmers themselves. It's really an all of system approach to making things more able to not just bounce back, but in some cases bounce back better if something does happen.
And some technological failures and breaches are harder to bounce back from than others too. You know, some are just about impossible to foresee in the first place. Also, you know, if I could just rattle off a bit of a list here, I'm thinking there was the snowstorm here in Western Manitoba back in April. Both the hydro and the backup system went, that they crashed at a hog barn, and workers couldn't get to the site in time to get enough air into the barn, so the hogs suffocated. In a broader sense, there was the software update that crashed the Rogers wireless and internet service across Canada back in July. If we go back as far as 1989, there was a storm of solar flares that knocked out a whole lot of power in Quebec. When we consider, you know, flukes on that level, I mean, what does preparedness even start to look like then?
So you have the environmental concerns. Clearly, we're seeing even more environmental related disasters and extreme weather conditions. And yes, you got to think through that stuff. And that also has a direct impact on security and cybersecurity as well. If your servers get knocked out, again, you got to go to business continuity plans. And are you going to go to paper and pen? How are you going to communicate? Have you thought about these? Do you have those contingency plans in place? So the principle of it is have those contingency plans. If we take the Rogers one, the Rogers outage, the national outage in particular, do you have backup systems for connectivity? And there's a lot of technological innovation that's coming down the pipes. Clearly, Starlink is one of them, satellite-based internet and communication. But it was really interesting. So when the Rogers outage happened, I personally got calls from media across the country. And the first question they asked is, Ritesh, thank God you're connected. You're not on Rogers. I was like, well, actually, I have everything. I got all the major carriers, and the reason for that, that's my contingency plan. I do interviews. I will, I got to communicate. I got to deal with clients. So I have SIM cards for remote connectivity from different carriers. I got, you know, I clearly have the ones that I use on a daily basis. But I spread the risk. So even in my own house, I got two ISPs. Now, again, that stuff is expensive. I don't want to, not everyone can afford to have two internet carriers, given how much we pay for internet access any which ways. But you got to really think these things through. Like, there is a component of this where I think government really needs to work with industry as well. There needs to, you know, we really got to work together if we're going to solve these types of problems. But again, the key here to building resilience is having those business continuity plans and practicing them. I cannot emphasize practicing them. The power goes out. What are you going to do? The air circulation system in a barn gets turned off. What are you going to do? That, it's not just about cybersecurity and data. It's about ensuring that your business continues, period. And technology is a part of it, but it's not the only element of it.
That's exactly right. And when you look at definitions of disaster resilience, the idea there is it's about a shared responsibility. So you're getting in there earlier in areas where you're anticipating something is likely to happen, or you know it's happened before and it's going to happen again. And it's about working together among individuals, organizations, levels of government and others to really think about, as Ritesh is saying, what will I do when, not if? And what are the best ways to be able to adapt on the basis of learning from past experience so that when it happens again, just like your immune system learns, sometimes if you've been exposed or an animal's been exposed to a particular disease, the immune system adapts, and the next time it encounters that disease, it's in a better position to contend with it. It doesn't mean it might not have some symptoms, but it's going to be able to, in those cases, do better and recover more quickly. And sometimes, as I was saying before, the organizations or a farm has an opportunity to say, hey, I've learned from this in the past. I'm in a stronger position, like Marty, to be able to bounce forward rather than just recovering to where I was before.
So, Janosz, maybe building on exactly what you're saying there is maybe another component of this could be building community.
Absolutely.
Right? If we're all in this together, it only makes sense that we all help each other out. And if you're, you know, if you're a farmer, you know, communicating with the farm adjacent to you and next to you, because if the power goes out or if connectivity goes out, we're all, it's not just you that's probably going to be in that situation. There's going to be multiple people in that situation. And I think all the more reason for community to come together to help each other out throughout these types of incidents, because one person can't do it alone.
That's the ticket. When it comes to food, we really are all in it together. And when we think about resilience, it's about building the resilience of groups and systems, not just individuals. So resilience is about helping people who are affected get the kinds of resources they need when they need it in ways that make sense and are helpful to them in that moment. And that's a collective effort. So when we talk about our idea of cyber barn raising, it is very much about building a community across an entire agri-food ecosystem that's essential to Canada's prosperity and well-being. And I'll just give you a quick analogy. It's not the best analogy these days, but when you've got a major military alliance like NATO, they practice regularly across all member organizations and across all branches of their military, focusing on different kinds of scenarios that they might have to respond to. Why? Because they have to make sure that they have interoperability. They have to make sure that they're agile and they can respond in an effective and coordinated way when different kinds of events may happen. And sometimes that involves response to natural disaster potentially as well. So we can learn from those very large scale practice runs and think about what we can do together to make sure that we're better prepared in the event that something happens from a cyber perspective or a natural disaster perspective to our critical supply chains involving the ag food system.
And to bring it back to the metaphor of the barn raising, you know, that is kind of tough to do in parts of the country where the foundations are, you know, sort of notoriously and intrinsically squishy. You know, I mean, we're dealing with an industry that's based in areas where connectivity is kind of weak in the first place, let's be honest. You know, and we've talked in the past about that. I mean, how can a farmer build robustness into those systems where connectivity, as much as we're increasingly relying on it, you know, how can you build robustness into those systems?
Well, I think that's an important question, and it's important because I would say let's unask that question. It's not just about the farmer. When we look at our framework for cyber barn raising, we've got really four key posts that are supporting the barn, if I can put it that way. One is to build and support public-private partnerships. So farmers should never be on their own here. We need to think about putting producers at the center, but really including all of the relevant stakeholders in conversations that involve listening carefully to the needs of producers, learning together, and building adaptive capacity going forward. That producer-centered approach does involve strengthening on-farm cybersecurity, and there are a lot of things that we can start to do in terms of pushing resources towards producers, making sure they've got education and training opportunities, ensuring technical supports are available where they need it and when they need it. So when we're thinking about rural connectivity, that's going to be really important here as well. And the third piece is thinking about how to develop workforce capacity, and not just for cybersecurity professionals, although that's going to be important. But when we look ahead to that next generation of ag producers, what can we do to help them start to bake in that cultural acuity to cybersecurity that Ritesh was talking about? And then the last thing is really thinking about strengthening governance to strengthen trust within the agri-food value chain, so that people can work together, knowing that things like data will be protected, there are safeguards in place, there are standards and regulations to ensure that producers feel that they can do what they need to do with the data that they have produced, and that tech providers can be in a stronger position to advertise the value that they can bring to things like precision ag and all of the benefits that come from that. So it's really an all of system perspective that, as Ritesh says, at the end of the day, is building and sustaining a community of better practice that's focused on resilience, and that understands that cybersecurity is primarily a human thing rather than just a tech-centered thing.
And Janos, that's why it's going to be really important to communicate this and educate, right? Let's be realistic. How many organizations have IT departments? How many organizations have access to cybersecurity professionals? Probably a handful of organizations. And the majority of our ag sector is independent owners, business owners, small business owners. So I think we really have to, as a community, as society, and governments, right, come together and say, this stuff is important, and creating a 50-page report is not going to do, you know, is not going to do anything. We got to put money where our mouth is. We got to invest in training. We got to be able to communicate this. You know, we got to do more of these types of podcasts that people can listen to really understand, what do I do in these types of situations? And that's where I think that our greatest strength lies, is in our ability to convince people, A, this is serious stuff. And B, don't worry, you're not in this alone. We're all in this together. And here are resources. Here is access to a community. Please reach out to these individuals. And we will help you get to that stage. Because I think what we learned is, with the latest breaches that we're hearing about on the news, one element of that supply chain goes down, there's a ripple effect across the country. And it's not just in that sector, it's every sector. If a food producer goes down, that impacts tourism, that impacts retail, that will impact restaurants, that will impact just about the employees, that will impact just about every sector, because it's so interconnected to our national security and sovereignty. So it's just really important we get it right. I don't know what your thoughts are about that, but it's important to communicate this, and it's important to educate.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to help everyone understand that there are ways of thinking about this that are very similar to ways of thinking about things that we're more familiar with. So in a way, we should be de-emphasizing the tech part of this a little bit, and really underlining the fact that this is about good farm business risk management at the level of the individual farm. It's also about good system or ecosystem risk management to ensure stronger capacity to adapt when the inevitable stuff does happen. We all have a role to play. We all have a responsibility to play. And it starts with thinking together, understanding together, learning together, and collaborating. And again, you know, let's make this farm-centered, but let's not require that farmers shoulder the entire burden. There's a role for every one of us in this big process, because it matters for every one of us.
And obviously, there's been signs that governments at the federal level, at the very least, have taken this seriously. I mean, the Community Safety Knowledge Alliance has been working on this project for cybersecurity on the farm with some government funding, you know, to strengthen, you know, cybersecurity across the ag sector. But if we can flip that the other way too, I mean, you know, if we're talking about, you know, governments taking a sort of a direct, governments and communities taking a direct role, I mean, it also comes back to the farmer as well. I mean, do farmers with that public presence in mind, you know, do farmers now have legal obligations also to make sure that any shared business networks are protected? You know, I mean, do you see that those sorts of obligations or legal mandates, you know, coming sometime down the road as well?
Since we've got a lawyer here, let's hear from him.
Well, let's redo that because I'm not a lawyer yet. So almost there.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry.
I'll be there. I'll be a lawyer in June once I get called to the bar, but an articling student, but that's okay. So when it comes to the legal perspective of this, are farmers going to be mandated? To me, here's the thing. The law is not the ceiling. You can pass laws all you want and people will say, oh, I adhere to the laws. Therefore, I'm a good corporate citizen, or I'm a good citizen, or I'm a good business. But then in the next breath, they'll say the laws are inadequate. So to me, it's, if we got to look at, you know, you can't regulate this stuff. Instead, if we got to look at the law as the floor, and everything that you do in addition to that is the value add to society. So is there going to be laws that are going to come down the pipe that are going to impact farmers? Indirectly, yes. There's actually a bill, right? There's two bills right now. There's Bill C-26, the cybersecurity bill. That only applies to federally regulated organizations. However, I believe there's a third-party component to it. So if you're a producer that's selling some sort of service to a federally regulated organization, you might be subject to Bill C-26. What does that mean? Essentially, you'll need a cybersecurity plan. There's some other elements of it as well. It's going into its second reading, so we'll see kind of what the final law looks like and how it impacts organizations working with federally regulated companies. And the second bill is Bill C-27, which is the privacy bill. So any organization engaged in commercial activity would be subject to it. Essentially, where's the data being housed? What data protection measures have you put in place? Substantial fines for failure to report a cyber breach. I believe it's a percentage of global revenue, and the creation of a tribunal. There's also other elements of it as well. So if you on your farm want to use technology that uses some sort of artificial intelligence, well, there's going to be a new position created, the AI and Data Commissioner, and kind of how we regulate artificial intelligence moving forward. So yes, there's going to be laws coming down the pipe that are going to impact farmers. But those laws are not the ceiling. We got to look at them as the floor. And I also don't believe you can regulate everything. So again, we're not going to pass laws that say you must take this course or you must do A, B, and C. I think that would be silly. But again, we get back to the point of the value add. That means culture. It has to be ingrained. We got to get people to do things because they want to do it, because the risk of not doing it is so significant. It's a preventative measure. And cybersecurity is not a checkbox exercise. It's continuous. So yes, there's going to be laws, but we don't need laws to understand cybersecurity and prepare for creating a healthy and safe physical and digital environment.
And I hate to sound like the prophet of doom here, but for all the discussion out there about working cybersecurity into business risk management as well, it does seem that a lot of larger businesses in this country are sort of going the wrong way. Last month, KPMG did a survey of CEOs of larger Canadian companies. And if I could just rattle this off very quickly, companies that see themselves as well-prepared or very well-prepared for a cyber attack, 56%. That's down from like 73% last year. Companies seeing themselves as underprepared, 20%, up from 7. Companies with no plan in place for a ransomware attack, 24%, up from 5. Companies that don't think a strong cyber culture is as important as technological controls, 37%, up from 3. Full marks from these executives for their candor and frankness on the matter, but some of those numbers don't exactly inspire much confidence. I mean, what's going on here? Is it just that more and more businesses are understaffed because of the pandemic, or what are we seeing here?
Well, I think it's not surprising when we look at the research that we've carried out and the insights that's generated. Cybersecurity is still not a priority for farmers anywhere. Whether we look across some of the preliminary survey research we've done, research done by others, and even research done in other countries, it's not in the top 10 list of things they're thinking about at the moment. We're hoping that we can help that change, and activities like this are going to be really important. But organizations also have different pressures, and sometimes they haven't elevated those kinds of pressures and concerns related to cyber to the level of senior executives or to the level of boards of directors. They haven't understood, in some cases, that this is an enterprise risk management problem, but it's also an enterprise business development opportunity. So I like to joke sometimes, you don't want to be the prophet of doom. I'd rather be the harbinger of opportunity. So the opportunity here is to recognize that if you really build good cybersecurity practices into your business operations, one of the things you're going to get is better insight into your business operations. And that's going to help you to strengthen your competitive advantage as a business. The final thing I'd add is, as humans and as collections of humans, organizations are no less subject to different kinds of cognitive biases or ways of misperceiving the world as any individuals are. And sometimes that means that you fall a little bit victim to the optimism bias, the idea that things aren't going to happen to us that are going to be negative, or things that are familiar are going to guide our decision making for the future, or sometimes a myopia bias, the idea that we're just going to focus on the present benefits of how we're doing things, and perhaps not look a little bit further ahead to some of the risks, but also opportunities on the horizon that might require us to do things a little bit differently. So it's, again, there's a human dimension. It's about how we govern our organizations, how we think about not just risks, but opportunities, and also how we bring a diversity of perspectives into play so that we're less likely to fall victim to some of those cognitive biases that normally help us to adapt, but sometimes trip us up.
And I think, Janos, you made such a fantastic point. And I think the reason these numbers are the numbers that they are is quite simply because it is still a very reactive model. I'm not going to think about ransomware and cybersecurity because it's not going to happen to me. It still seems to be the kind of the saying that I hear when I talk to people. And how much did you spend on cybersecurity last year? Oh, not that much. We're just extra cautious and careful. Do you have business continuity plans? Nah. Have you tested it? No. Because it's very reactive. Until it happens to them, that's when they're like, uh-oh, I can't access my files. My customers are breathing down my neck. They want to know exactly what I'm doing about this. I got to do client notifications. I may have to do certain legal notifications as well, to whether it be the Office of the Privacy Commissioner or some other entity or body. So it's very reactive. And I think I get back to that original example of comparing it to health and safety. Right, we wouldn't think twice without going onto a farm without the proper PPE. Well, cybersecurity is today what health and safety was 20 years ago. It is still a reactionary. And I think having, again, these types of conversations, the more people get exposed to the risks of cybersecurity, just how expensive and just how difficult it is if you've been breached to get your systems back up and running. Not to mention the human component of this, where you have individuals that are stressed out. You'll have the huge impacts on kind of the personnel issue, the morale issue within your organization. And until people start seeing more and more of that, which they are now, that trend starts to shift from reactive to proactive, from this being a checkbox exercise to this being something continuous within the organization.
And I do hope that after all this discussion about responsibility as well, that farmers don't come away from this thinking this should all be up to them. And, I'd like to, as much as I'd like to keep talking about this for a while yet, we do have to wrap this up soon. But if we get back to the barn raising analogy, the cyber barn raising analogy, what can others, and by others, I mean, us, other farmers, what can we be doing at our level to help farmers prepare?
I think number one, continue the conversation. The conversation is gaining momentum. That's really important. Number two, producers, their associations, and all of the organizations that are really on looking out for the well-being of our producers should be having conversations about what can we do that we're doing already and do more of it to make things better, but where do we need to get help from, and let those parties know that more help is required and more help needs to be directed to producers. Number three or number four, levels of government and the private sector need to increase their level of dialogue and start looking towards the kinds of collaborative structures and processes that are going to make a difference in terms of directing resources, amping up education and training, and also thinking about things like governance that can help producers and help the overall system to achieve a better position in terms of its cybersecurity opportunities.
Janosch, I'm just going to add one more to that, and that is build community as well.
Okay. And for all this discussion about continuing the conversation, we are going to have to conclude this conversation right at the moment, unfortunately. But I do hope that we've given people food for thought with this series. And I very much appreciate both you gentlemen taking the time to take part in this series. And also thanks to Dave McMahon as well, who was on a previous episode. Janosch Bochner, Ritesh Kotek, thank you very much for your time. And on behalf of everybody here at Glacier Farm Media, and I hope we can continue this discussion very, very soon.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks so much. And significant thanks to Glacier Farm Media for supporting this important dialogue.
On behalf of Glacier Farm Media, you're more than welcome. And to Janosch Bochner, thank you very much for your time today.
My great pleasure, Dave.
And Ritesh Kotek, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listening to Janosch Bochner and Ritesh Kotek, consultants with the Community Safety Knowledge Alliance. That's the lead organization on the Cybersecurity Capacity in Canadian Agriculture project. For more information on that project, check out cskacanada.ca/projects. Well, this concludes our special four-part series. I'd like to thank our guests for all their help and cooperation in putting this series together, and by all means, let's keep this conversation going. If you have any thoughts on what you've heard or other concerns relating to cybersecurity at the farm gate, contact the CSKA or feel free to drop us a line here at Glacier Farm Media. You've been listening to The Cyber Savvy Farmer. I've been your host, Dave Bedard. Thanks for listening.